Welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Smith. I am so excited to be in your ear today. Today we are going to be discussing the science of weight loss with a focus on nutrition, so you don't want to miss it. Stay tuned. Welcome to Straight Talk with My OBMD podcast. Join me for a bi-weekly discussion on topics most relevant to women's health today. We are your source for medically accurate, real-world advice in all things related to your health and well-being as a woman. From menses to menopause, we've got you covered. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Smith, a fully practicing, board-certified OBGYN physician with close to 20 years' experience. I am also the founder of the website that is 100% dedicated to women's health, myobmd.org. At myobmd.org, we write in all aspects related to women's health. Listen to our podcast, visit our website, subscribe to our newsletter, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram, myobmd.org. Welcome back to another episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Smith, board certified and practicing OBGYN physician and the founder of the amazing website, myobmd.org. That's myobmd.org, where we are 100% dedicated to your health. At myobmd.org, you'll find information related to women's health, all written by physicians, all trusted medical information. So, let's talk about weight, okay? So, we know that this is a very, very popular topic. This is a popular topic of discussion. Popular topic on the news. I feel like it is not going anywhere. We just talk about weight so much. But what does it actually mean to us, right? Our weight is more, is so much more than just a number. Of course, our weight affects so much of how we feel about ourselves. Because of course, we look in the mirror every day. And so what we see looking back at us can either cause us to smile, cause us to cringe, cause us to frown. It really does impact our emotions in such a profound way. It impacts our self-esteem. Have you ever had the experience where you look at yourself in a picture and you go, wow, I look amazing, or you're like, I didn't know I had that fill in the gap. I wish I did this, or I wish I looked this way, or something, right? So the way our weight is really more than just a number on a scale. Not only does our weight affect us emotionally, it also affects our medical risk. Of course, most people are aware of this. Diabetes and heart disease, certain cancers such as colon and breast cancers, those can be weight related, right? There are other factors as well, but a large factor for a lot of people is our weight. It affects our longevity, so how long we live for, how long you want to carry this body around for, it affects all of that. It affects our families and our loved ones. How does it affect them? Well, it affects them in two ways. One, our behavior and our habits are going to influence those around us, whether positive or negative. So if you're having healthy habits to promote a healthy weight, then that will rub off on those around you, whether that be your family, your coworkers, your friends. The other way that our weight affects our family members is quite frankly, in premature deaths, right? So God forbid, if you're not around for your family, how will that impact them? So weight is a lot more than just a number, and it affects all aspects of our life. So let's get into what is a healthy weight. So for most people, the weight are categorized as either healthy, underweight, overweight, or obese. And that's determined by your BMI, or your body mass index. Your body mass index is determined by your height, which is a fixed factor. You have zero consequence, zero influence on your height. That is all genetic. And your weight, which is a modifiable factor. So your BMI is calculated based on those two things. And using those, when you put those two numbers into a BMI calculator, that calculator will spit out a number. That number will determine whether you're at a healthy weight, underweight, overweight, or obese. The reason I say that this is the case for most people is because there are a few exceptions. Just like anything else, there are always exceptions. So the exception in this case is that well-conditioned athletes, and in particular bodybuilders, they may have a high BMI and still be quite healthy, okay, because their muscle mass is so great. And muscle, of course, weighs more than fat. So in those cases, you may have a BMI that says this person is overweight, but in fact, you're at a healthy weight because you just have a higher degree of muscle mass than the average person. Most of us are not well-conditioned athletes, let's face it. For most people, the BMI calculator will be adequate. Now, keep in mind, there is a BMI calculator on our website, myobmd.org. And so you can go to that to figure out what your actual BMI is. Now, what are those numbers? BMI under 18 is considered unhealthy. Very few people have a BMI less than 18. A BMI that's less than 18 is considered unhealthy. A BMI between 18 to 24.99, so 18 to 25, let's say, is healthy. Okay? 26 to 30, or greater than 25 to 30, is overweight. More than 30, a BMI of greater than 30, is medically considered obese. A BMI that's over 35 is considered a greater class of obesity. And the reason medically we class the weight according to in these categories is because sometimes your insurance will say, hey, based on this BMI, you may qualify for certain services. You may qualify for a nutritionist service, or you may qualify for a personal trainer that we will help to pay for, or you may qualify for weight loss medication or weight loss surgery, whichever the case may be. So based on these numbers, as well as how you're doing overall, your overall health, that will determine what services are available to you through your insurance for help with weight, with managing your weight. So let's look at some of the reasons we're overweight, some of the reasons people become overweight. So no matter what the reason is, one of the most common reasons, rather, for being overweight is there's an imbalance between your activity level and food intake. So if we're having a large degree of food intake and a low degree of activity level, that's going to lead to weight gain. If our food intake and our activity level are balanced, that will lead to weight maintenance, where you're not losing and you're not gaining. If your activity level surpasses your food intake, as far as the amount of energy you're expending, so you're expending more energy and activity than what you're taking in as you're consuming as food, then you will achieve weight loss. So an imbalance between your activity level and your food intake is a primary factor associated with weight gain. Other factors that contribute are family history, certain medications such as steroids, certain birth control can cause some degree of weight gain, not an exorbitant amount, but sometimes, for instance, certain birth control, I'll tell patients, hey, you may see up to a 5-pound weight gain. So not 30 pounds, okay? Steroids, yes, steroids can notoriously cause weight gain, especially if they're used on a chronic basis. So if you have to take steroids for a chronic condition, then you do want to be aware of that and you want to be able to take measures to mitigate the amount of weight that may come on from that steroid use. And medical conditions such as PCOS, Cushing's disease, those are all endocrinological disorders that cause or are associated with weight gain. So those are some of the reasons that we can become overweight. So what can we do about it? What is the secret of weight loss? Do you want to know? Okay. Weight loss is a numbers game, okay? It is simply comes down to the numbers. So if we want to lose weight, we have to expend more calories than what we take in. It's really that simple. In order to lose weight, the amount of calories that you take in, which is calories, is really a measure of energy. So the amount of energy we are consuming through our food must be less than the amount of energy we are expending. So once the energy we're expending exceeds the amount of energy we take in, i.e. the foods that we eat, weight loss will automatically occur. Keep in mind, 1 pound is the equivalent of about 3,500 calories. So depending on the rate that you want to lose your weight, that will determine how much energy you need to expend and how much food, how many calories you want to consume. So for most people, a healthy rate of weight loss is 1 to 2 pounds per week. So since 1 pound is the equivalent of 3,500 calories, you'll need to burn an extra 500 calories, let's say for 7 days each week to reduce your intake, or you reduce your intake by that amount. And most people will do a combination of that, okay? So if you want to lose 1 pound per week, you want to somehow expend 3,500 calories per week, more than what you're taking in. Okay, so you can do that by exercising more to burn off more calories and or reducing your calories by that amount. And again, usually it's some combination of both that will achieve that 3,500 calorie reduction per week to allow that 1 pound weight loss per week. So how many calories do we expend on average? So even if you're not doing formal exercise, even if you're not gearing up, putting on your jogging suit, your running shoes, going outside, hitting the treadmill, working out, you're still expending energy because it takes energy for us, for our bodies just to do its basic functions. Most of us, we walk around, we're ambulatory, we walk around our home, we walk around at work, we walk to do grocery shopping, you walk to the car and back, So our regular activities of daily living will require some caloric demand, right? That's why we eat, so we can have the energy sufficient to meet these demands. Now, for everyone, the amount of calories we expend doing those simple tasks will vary. So for a person that's sedentary, so someone, let's say they have a desk job, there's minimal walking, they are likely to expend no more than 1,500 calories per day. And to be honest, it'll probably be less than that. But I'm being generous. So the person who is really not doing a whole lot every day, their job requires them to sit. So they're sitting for most of the day. There's very little walking. Your caloric demand for the day just to do that activity will likely be less than 1,500 calories. Now, for an active person, so let's say someone who's working at a warehouse, you're a cleaner, you're an athlete, you work in an art industry or the entertainment industry where you're just not sitting behind a desk for most of the day, hospital workers, cleaners, commercial cleaners, people who clean people's homes. Those are people who are definitely not sedentary, right? You're walking around for most of the day. You're actually doing something. You're using your limbs. And so for those folks, they will likely have a caloric demand that is somewhere between 1,500 to 2,000. I have never known anyone to have a caloric demand that exceeds 2,200 calories for the day. And that's a lot. So if you're very active, you may have an increased caloric demand of about 500 calories. So not a whole lot more, but definitely it's 500 more per day. That adds up. So on average, most people will have a caloric demand of 1,500 to 2,000 per day, no more than, let's say, for some people, it may even be less. It may be 1,200 calories per day, depending on your activity level. So that's just for your maintenance, right? That's just the calories your body needs to maintain its bodily functions and for you to do your activities of daily living. Outside of that, you will need to either consume a little less than you need so that part of your activities of daily living, you're actually doing a workout, so you're consuming, your body is using up some of the calories it already has, rather than you providing those calories through food, and then you will see weight loss, okay? Or you decide that, hey, if my body needs 1,500 calories, I'm going to consume the 1,500 calories, but I'm going to now work out an extra 500 calories each day, so that by the end of the week, if you do 500 calories 30 minutes each day by the end of the week, you would have a deficit of 3,500 calories, which will create a weight loss. Now, it sounds pretty simple, but in real life, the truth of the matter is it never is, because there are factors that influence our success, such as hunger, right? Sometimes you're just hungry and you may not necessarily reach for the right things to eat. You may not make the healthier choices, and so you may choose a food that is of high caloric density. Now you're consuming a lot more calories than you planned for. Motivation is another factor that influences our success. So hunger, motivation, stress, and fatigue. So hunger, stress, and fatigue influence our sugar and our salt cravings, because when we're hungry, we're stressed, or we're tired, that really creates this sense of entitlement and frustration. And that's not necessarily a great starting point for wise food choices. Typically, when we have that emotion, we feel that food becomes a reward, and the reward is, I am going to eat what I like, what tastes good. I am going to satisfy my palate. And so we reach for items that we wouldn't ordinarily reach for had we felt some fullness or satisfied, or we weren't hungry, or we weren't stressed. So let's try to take a look at some of these factors and how we can influence that. So when we experience hunger, okay, it is a cry for help from our bodies. Our bodies are saying to us, feed me, right? My husband has this saying, feed me, Seymour. It's our body's way of telling us that it is in need of either calories or it's in need of nutrition. So if you haven't had enough calories to meet your body's demand, your brain will increase your hunger cues. The reason your brain does this is it wants you to eat. It wants to force you to eat because it simply needs the calories to carry out its vital functions. And so our hunger cues will become stronger and stronger until that caloric demand is satisfied. Now, there's another reason that we can be hungry is if we have consumed the calories, but we haven't consumed the nutrition. So your body is missing important nutrients that are essential in carrying out its daily function. And so again, it's sending you these cues of hunger, but now you have to be smart to recognize that, hey, my body really needs something nutritious. It doesn't really need these empty calories. So for instance, let's say you've had a day where you have really kind of snacked all day. You're snacking on potato chips, chocolate chips, whatever the case may be. And these are high caloric food items. But the food is of poor nutritional value. So even though you have consumed a large amount of calories for the day, you will still feel hungry. You'll still feel hungry because those calories did not come with nutritional value. And so your body will still be lacking nutrition, and so you're going to still have these hunger cues despite having a large amount of calories consumed already for the day. So it's important to recognize this so that you'll now reach for the food item that offers the nutrition your body is craving. And that is one way to satisfy the hunger cue. Now, it's important to recognize a few things, okay? One, despite our very best effort, weight loss very rarely goes in a stepwise fashion. What do I mean by that? Weight loss will always be fluctuations in our weight. And that is normal. Do not beat yourself up because you see an extra 1 or 2 pounds on the scale when you were down by 5 pounds. This is normal. Now, you do want to take a minute when you see that and try to reflect to see if this is a signal that you may not be as consistent as you were before. And so you can shore up your resources and your discipline to recognize that, hey, I may be slacking off a little bit, and I may need to do something, may need to kind of recognize my points of weaknesses and try to fix those. But we're human, And as such, guess what? We make mistakes. We are not going to always be at the top of our game every single day, every hour of every day. So we do have to give ourselves some grace and some mercy with that, okay? We're human, it happens. If you have consumed something that you know is maybe not a healthy choice, rather than looking at that with judgment or with disdain, you want to look at that and think about, hey, why did I do that? What was going on? Why did I do that? So I can be prepared the next time that happens. Was I frustrated? Was I angry? Was I just really hungry because I neglected to eat because I was just having such a busy day? And what could I have done differently so that the next time you will at least have a plan in place to help combat that, so it prevents that, helps to reduce the risk of that recurring, okay? Now, there are some foods that we eat that we are using as medication, okay? So for some of us, we may have issues with anxiety. We may have issues of depression. We may have childhood trauma. And these issues are haunting our food choices. We're using food as a salve to treat our wound. Cognitively, we know that this will not work, but yet we still continue to do it day after day. This issue may need to be resolved through counseling, okay, or treatment of those issues directly. So it's important for us to recognize why we're making the choices that we're making and have an honest and candid discussion with yourself. It doesn't mean you're being unkind to yourself. That's not what I am saying. I am saying you're just being honest with how you feel. I'm feeling anxious, and so I reach for this to comfort me. I can't believe that this person did this to me, and that makes me sad, and so I reach for this item, whatever the case may be, whatever food item that may be, in order to make me feel emotionally better. We're not placing a judgment on the action. We're not placing a judgment on how you feel. We're simply stating it as a fact. So, only you truly can have that conversation with yourself. Be kind to yourself as you would be kind to a friend who is having that conversation with you. But it is a conversation that does need to occur, okay? So, we have talked about how stress and fatigue play a role in our food choices because it adds to our sense of entitlement. Fatigue is something that definitely reflects our lack of prioritizing our body's most basic need, and that is rest. So if you feel like you're constantly tired, you really want to take a step back and look at, why am I always tired? Am I being kind to my body? Am I giving my body what it needs? And how can you fix that? And when I say rest, I mean restorative rest. Rest where you sleep and you wake up feeling well rested. Okay, stress, this is a part of life, right? There's good stress, there's bad stress. Good stress is the stress of working on, for instance, a passion project, pushing your boundaries for personal or professional growth. So you're working on something, you're giving a presentation. These things are stressful, but they're good stress because they're just part of how we grow. Now, the bad stresses are more along the lines of financial distress, right? health stressors. You've gotten a health bad report. Something is going on that's outside of your control with your body. Dysfunctional relationships, fear, strife. These are bad stresses. The best way to deal with bad stress is to, as much as you're as possible, to eliminate it or avoid it as much as you can. Now, some of these will not be avoidable. If it is unavoidable, then we have to work on finding healthy coping mechanisms. Healthy coping mechanisms to shore up our resources and our strength, right? So some of the healthy ways of coping with stress is to strengthen your relationships with people that you know who are common, who gives you wise counsel, maybe avoiding the person that does not. Shoring up your religious fortitude, right? Counseling. So we have to figure out what are the ways that you can handle stress in a healthy way, the stress that is unavoidable. Do you do your art? Do you play a musical instrument? Do you go swimming? Do you go running? So those are just some of the ways that we can have a healthy response to stress. And I just want to point out that, yes, we're talking about weight and weight loss. And yes, we do need to talk about stress and fatigue and anxiety, because that drives a lot of our decisions and our choices on what we eat. Now, what to actually eat. We know plenty of fruits and veggies, right? I always recommend to patients, try to eat some raw vegetables, please. Cooked vegetables are great, but raw vegetables, they're filled with water. They really can fill you up quite a bit, so your hunger is not as great. So plenty of fruit, plenty of vegetables. You really want to avoid the processed food or eliminate it altogether. The high-fat foods, such as most fast foods, are high in fat. The high-fat dairy, the sugary drinks, the alcohol, those are things that will sabotage your weight loss process. It may be difficult to eliminate all of these at once. That would be very difficult. So most people eliminate them one at a time. I always tell patients, start with the sugary drinks. Start with the sugary drinks. Just drink water. Just drink water. Okay, if you're having a hard time drinking the water, dilute your water with a little bit of your favorite sugary beverage. So you may start with half water, half sugary drink. Then you go to 3/4 water, 1/4 sugary drink, until you get to the point where you're just drinking the plain water. Okay, so start with that. Cut out your sugary drink. If you're already doing great with not consuming that and you're only drinking water, then alcohol, if you cut out the alcohol, that will give you a big boost. And of course, processed food. So you decide the order that you want to do it, whether you want to start with your sugary drink, alcohol, or processed food. But those three things are very big factors, okay? Factors of success, food logs, just recording the food that you eat. Most of us have a smartphone that will allow us to calculate, to put in our food items, and it calculates the calorie, tells you the calorie. Even if you don't do that, even if you just simply write it down, that is an important part of a successful weight loss journey, is logging your food, okay? Remember, all of these things are not enough. If you're logging your food, you've cut out your alcohol, you've cut down on your sugary drinks, your processed food, and also I neglected to mention, log the amount of activity that you do. We're going to talk about that in the next podcast, in another podcast, but also log the amount of activity that you do. Then medication may be suitable for you if you find that all that you have done is not giving you the result that you were looking for, surgery may also be an option. But remember, even with medication and with surgery, the goal is still reduction in caloric intake and increased physical activity. So no matter what you choose, it's still all roads lead to reduced calorie intake and increased physical activity. Okay? So thank you for listening to this episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD, The Science of Weight Loss, Part 1, Nutrition. Please visit our website at myobmd.org to learn more about this topic and many other topics on your health journey. We're here for you. Share with us your strategies for success on your weight loss health goal. Share with us any struggles you may have, how you deal with it, any tips you may want to share with us all. Okay? Thank you for listening. This is Dr. Dana Smith with My OBMD. Thank you for listening to another episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD podcast. To learn more about this topic, visit our website at myobmd.org. Subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. I can't wait to spend more time with you on our next episode of Straight Talk with My OBMD.